Like a chrysalis, we're emerging from the economy of the Industrial Revolution. An economy confined to and limited by the Earth's physical resources, into the economy in mind, in which there are no bounds on human imagination, and the freedom to create is the most precious natural resource.
Welcome to the Soul of Enterprise, Business and the Knowledge Economy, sponsored by, well, no one. Ed, why is that?
Well, Ron, there's been a slight change, my friend and co-host. Yes, as of Tuesday, I am no longer under the gainful employ of Sage. It was almost 21 years. So I think I've done a lot there. Happy to for all of the work that I've done. Probably far too many people for me to begin thanking, sure. And I'm not even going to try to list all of them. But I do want to acknowledge Taylor McDonald, who is the one who hired me first, and was the person who really was instrumental in kicking me off in the career that I've had at Sage. You know, he brought me in charge of partner recruitment and partner development. And then when Sage acquired ACPAC, I guess that was like 2005, 2006, I was able to successfully get out from under the partner recruitment side and just drop in and did the partner development piece. And this is a funny story, Rob. I think you'll appreciate this because my last or technical title at Sage has always been Senior Director of Partner Development and Strategy. And the end strategy piece was added, and it was added after we had a rough year at Sage. I forget when. Might have been 2007, 2008, in that time, or maybe 2009. I forget when Taylor left the first time. But so I had my annual performance agony, I mean appraisal, with Taylor. And this is a one for the record books and one to be remembered, because he called me because he was coming into Dallas for something else, some other meeting. And he was not feeling well. He was sick. So he said, "Ed, I got to do your performance review, but I think it was an Embassy Suites in Carrollton or something. You got to come over and meet me in this room." So I'm like, "Okay, fine." So I get over there. I go up in the elevator. You know, the Embassy Suites, Ron, the rooms are all the same. They have that little front parlor area. Then that's the bathroom, and in the back is the bedroom. And I get up to his room, and the door is propped open with a little latch thing. Mm-hmm. And I come in, and he says, "Stay in there." He was in the bedroom, and I sat in the kind of in the chair, and we could barely see one another because of the angle. And he stayed on the bed, which I appreciated. He didn't want to get me sick. Sure. And we conducted the performance appraisal. And it was one of these years where there was no cost of living adjustments. Right. It was just
hence
flat
the
out,
title.
Hence the title. Yeah. Enhanced. Well, yeah. So I asked him, I said, "Well, instead, could you add the words end strategy to my title?" And he's like, "Yeah." But I said, but you have to understand what this means. So if you have strategy in your title, it means you get paid to think. And you also get paid to tell other people what you think. They don't have to like what you think. They don't have to do what you think, but it means you get paid to think. And he's like, "Oh, all right, fine." You know, which is, I did that. Well, he leaves the organization, or was let go of the organization, however many years ago. This is before he came back via the Intact acquisition. And I had 16 bosses since him. And with every single one of them, I've had to have the conversation of, here's why I have end strategy in my title. So it was among the first meetings that I always had with whoever my new boss was to say, "Let me explain this to you. This is why I have end this word strategy in my title. And it means I get paid to think, and I'm going to tell you what I think." And so it was very helpful for him to do that, what seemed to be like a no nonsense thing, but because it really centered me. And the other important thing to note here, and this was another part of the explanation that I always did, is the strategy wasn't the partner strategy at Sage. It wasn't our go-to-market. In other words, it wasn't what is it that we're going to do with our partners from a go-to-market standpoint. That's not what I meant by partner strategy. The partner strategy was, I am going to be helping our partners with their strategy. So it was this pass down the line to that. So anyway, so my thanks to Taylor for that and other reasons, years of friendship as well and guidance. It was a great run, Ron. I mean, it really was a great run. Almost 21 years. It would have been 21 years the first week in July. I technically came on board then, but for 3 months or 4 months prior to that, I was a consultant. So I spoke at the Sage Insights conference before I was an employee. But at that point, I was a contractor only with the organization. So, yeah, it's been good. It's been enabled us to do this radio show for almost 10 years as well. So we have to give them some props for that. They did, in all fairness, give me a nice long runway to land on. I've got nothing but good things to say about that from an exit standpoint. And I'm now entering, Ron, what I'm calling my period of discernment.
I like it.
So I've got to discern what it is that I want to do next and how I want to go about doing that. And you and I had a conversation, and one of the things that we definitely want to do is continue the Soul of Enterprise. So we're looking for new sponsors. You're going to hear some commercials for it. But just as you know, just send that one email, asktsoe@verisage.com, and we'll be happy to send you over a sponsor pack. And if you're at all interested in becoming a sponsor of the show, we'd love to have you. I think, Ron, we can grow the show. I really do. I think we can take this to a whole nother level. In one way, the Sage sponsorship didn't allow us to do some of the things that I think that we can do and enhance it. Nothing bad in them. It's just being part of that corporate brand. There were some things that we were potentially prevented from doing that we're no longer prevented from doing. And it was just and right. That was the case. But now the guardrails are off. So can you imagine now what we're going to say?
And maybe even more time to say it. Who knows? We might lengthen the show too.
Yeah. So. That's, I mean, yeah. Grow means a lot of things, right? So, yeah.
And Ed, I'd like to thank Taylor too, because Taylor's the guy who put you and me together. Mm-hmm. And you and I met, it had to be shortly after you were hired by Sage.
Oh yeah.
Like within a year,
maybe it was definitely within a year. Yeah. It was definitely within a year. It may have been earlier, because one of the other things that I took over was that what was called actually the Best Leadership Academy, transformed to Sage Leadership Academy. And then one of the things that he wanted me to do is put together an alumni association. And I really think what happened is the first time you spoke to our alumni group. I think that's right. Although it may have been one of just our regular classes that we were doing at the time. So that was the connection point. But I had already read your book when I was in practice. But he was the one who said, okay, I want, and I said, oh yeah, now I'm familiar with this, but he said, I want you to go talk to him and see what's what. I guess he had seen you maybe at an AICPA event. Is that
Washington,
possible?
Washington, D.C. I remember it well. It was mm-hmm. right after Verisage was formed. We even had a booth at that conference and I spoke, Justin was there, Dan was there, and I do remember meeting Taylor there. He did introduce himself, I think, to me, but yeah, it was great because he put us together and we did a lot. I did a lot of work with Sage with you over the years, the Firm of the Future mm-hmm. boot camps we did all over the place. Mm-hmm. And even my brother attended your
consulting academy. Yes.
Consulting academy. Yeah. And he loved it. So, yeah.
No.
End of an era, beginning of a new one, I guess. That's great.
There you go. What's the trite saying? Close a door, open a window. Is that the deal? Yeah. Well, some good stuff ahead.
On that title thing, you know, the strategy means you get paid to think. That was worth more than a COLA adjustment.
Oh, absolutely.
And I just got done reading Ben Horowitz's book, you know, The Hard Things About Hard Things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, this is the Andreessen Horowitz. And he said, you know, it sounds dorky, but he says, you know what? Titles matter. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He says, because people ask for them and they put a lot of importance on them. Mm-hmm. And it's really true. I mean, I know the joke, you get an enhanced title rather than a raise, but you know, there people do pay attention to titles. Plus it tells other people kind of what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a friend, Thomas Casey, who was helpful, instrumental when he was at Sage in helping us get guests and other sponsors. You know, he actually, I think he did a blog post on this, or maybe it was on LinkedIn. He called it titling up. Like there were sometimes like if you, they look at your title and they're like, nope, I got it. You got to get titled up to, or to the appropriate level to where we got to meet in, you know? So.
Yeah, that's wild. But that, I can just envision Taylor laying in bed doing your annual agony. I mean, that needs to be a sketch on The Office or something. That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yep. So.
Well, Ed, we plan to do, talk about, is the CPA shortage a feature or a bug?
Ooh,
I mean, I can't believe this is all over. This is all the accounting podcasts are talking about. You know, there's a highly anticipated report coming out of the, what is it? The pipeline group, the National Pipeline Advisory Group, and NPAG.
That's a horrible acronym.
It is. And they're going to issue a report next month because they've been working on the pipeline issue and soliciting ideas. And we'll talk more about that. But, you know, we've done a show on occupational licensure. And I just want to say up front, talking about this issue is complex.
Yes.
There's no monocausal explanation for why a shortage is created, or surplus for that matter, in a profession. I think there are just millions of factors here. And this is why I'm very, very skeptical of even the studies that we're gonna talk about on today's show. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there's a bit of scientism in them.
Always.
And just because they have numbers doesn't mean, there's a lot of voodoo in them too. It's very hard to separate cause and effect here. So I just want to put that out there. But and in that caveat, too, there's something that, just to check our biases and our priors, we're obviously against occupational licensure. And this is not
standard.
Right. Period. Full stop. Yeah. We don't like the state licensing professions. We think certification's a better alternative. But that's not what the CPA has, even though it's in their title. Our license is given and granted by the states, the 50 states, and that's not a certification program. We'll talk about what are certification programs, but that's not one of them.
Indeed, Rambi, the certification programs can be more powerful than licensure.
I think they are. I think they are. And we'll talk about the occupations that have certification and don't have any state licensures, including, by the way, CPAs in other parts of the world, such as where we were founded, UK, they are not licensed by the government. They are licensed by the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales.
Mm.
Now, they're regulated by the government, of course, just like the SEC has regulatory authority over the profession here. But that's a far different animal than being licensed by the government itself.
Well, as always, we're going to get into this nitty gritty of this, but Ron, we're already up against our first break. Want to remind folks that you can get a hold of Ron or me by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Of course, the website is The Soul of Enterprise, where you can see show notes as well as previews to upcoming shows. We'd love for you to rate this podcast now more than ever, since we're looking to grow the show. Ratethispodcast.com/TSOE. Get that onto the air, and we were happy to read all of the reviews, good, bad, and indifferent. But right now, a word from, well, us, our sponsors. That's the same as us. All right, here we go.
Voice America is on LinkedIn. Connect with us today.
Are you a fan of The Soul of Enterprise? Have you always wanted to demonstrate you could create a commercial that was better than what Greg Kite developed? Well, now is your chance. Ed, tell them all about it.
Ron and I are actively looking for new sponsors for The Soul of Enterprise, and we have big plans to grow the show. To learn more, send us an email to asktsoe@verisage.com and put sponsor in the subject line, and we'll send you over our latest sponsor pack. We would love for you to be part of the TSOE team.
Have you ever read a book that changed your life? I sure have. Have you ever listened to an advertisement for a book so many times that you question the existence of God? Me too. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. I recorded the advertisement for Ron and Ed's book, The Soul of Enterprise Dialogues on Blah, 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 Whatever. And 4 years later, we're all tired of it, especially me. But thankfully, there's a solution. For just $10 a month, you never have to hear my voice again. For a commercial-free version of The Soul of Enterprise, go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe now.
Hey folks, Ed here. Ron is far too modest to tell you about his new book with Paul Dunn, so I'm just going to have to go ahead and do it. Scheduled to release on December 8th, Time's Up, the subscription business model for professional firms, is going to rock the world like the firm of the future did 2 decades ago. While you can't get the book until December, you can join the pre-order club by buying the book and sending us your receipt. Benefits start in August and will continue through February. For more details, visit thesoulofenterprise.com/timesup.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Kless. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using #AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about, is the CPA shortage a feature or a bug? And I just wanted to close out the thought on our priors, in that since we are against occupational licensure of all kinds, including doctors, and I know that freaks people out. You mean you'd want an unlicensed surgeon? Yeah, sure. If there was other things that was certifying them, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I would. But,
put that aside. But when you have that view, the first thing you look at when you hear shortage in a profession is, well, of course, that's a feature, not a bug. It's designed to limit competition to keep salaries high. Milton Friedman wrote about this. We might talk about that if we have time. But however, that doesn't explain why certain professions have surpluses. And I point to law for this.
Right.
And this is one of the anomalies I want to talk about, because law doesn't have a shortage problem. In fact, it's probably got the opposite problem, which is why they kind of mess with the bar exam pass rates. But I think with legal, and this is why this issue is so complex, I think legal, a law degree, is a springboard to many, many, many other occupations, you know, that elevate you, like politician. How many pundits on cable news, you know, are lawyers? I mean, Laura Ingraham, Megyn Kelly, you could go down this really, really
Sarah Isger, David French.
List. Yes, yeah. A very long list. And, you know, but they're not practicing law. So
no.
It just all this to say, this is a very, very complex issue with a lot of causes going on.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to do, and this is, we're kind of springboarding off a Cato event of all places that
I know was amazing
with the CPA shortage. It was a week ago or so they did this event. You can get it on the Cato Events website or their podcast. And there was a gentleman from Boz Bostrom from Minnesota. I think he's the incoming president of the society. And, there was an accounting professor, couple of accounting professors talking about it. And of course, it was moderated by Cato. It was a very good discussion. They linked to a lot of academic papers that I subsequently read. And let's just go through the first one just to kind of get into this. This is from the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. So it and the title of the report, or it's actually a study, Reducing a Barrier to Entry, the 120 versus 150 CPA licensing rule.
Mm-hmm.
And it was published in January 2020. Here's the abstract. Here's the findings. Using data from 2006 to 2016, our results indicate that a reduction in the number of credit hours required to sit for the CPA exam increases the number of candidates. We also find, and this is the interesting, we also find no relationship between changes in CPA exam requirements and pass rates or scores. Hence, requiring 150 hours instead of 120 acts as a barrier to entry for potential CPAs with no accompanying increase in candidate quality. Now, this is part of the scientism I was referring to.
Right.
They're only looking at the people who passed.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, they're not, it could have been, you could have kept out, you know, 12 geniuses that probably could have passed it no matter what, but just didn't want to go through the hassle of getting either 120 or 150 hours
right
of education. hence the problem, with even requiring a college degree. The other thing that this report pointed out, and along with some of the others, was this is the only license that requires 150 degree, 150 hours. The only business degree
right.
that requires 150 hours, which is kind of insane. So that was one of the. Now these are all academic studies that have been peer reviewed, by the way. That one as well. Another one comes from, I think, is my former professor, Stephen Mintz, rethinking the 150-hour requirement for CPA licensure. He did this with two other authors. And this one concludes the same thing, that the 150-hour is a barrier. They talk about the new license model, but says the accounting degree is the only business degree that requires 150 credits. The average starting salary of graduates with an accounting degree is not much different than those with one in complementary acumens like finance or information system. And then they cite a Center for Audit Quality report that minorities are disproportionately affected by the 150-hour rule. And here's the thing. We spend a lot of time talking about DEI in the profession and getting the minority representation up. And here we are with all of these studies, every single one of them says this negatively impacts getting minorities and women, not women so much, because they're coming in droves, but minorities, Hispanics, Blacks, into the profession. Mm-hmm. Every one of these studies, every one of them.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And just level set again, because I think this is a complex issue, as you said. I want you to answer this in your best accounting, with your accounting hat. What is it that the CPA allows you to do? It's very specific. It's not tax work, right? It's a very specific function. What does the CPA allow you to do?
Well, the CPA allows you to attest to financial statements. That's the monopoly.
That's it, that's right?
Allows you to practice before the IRS.
Okay. So you can do that with an EA, though.
You can do that with an EA. I even did it at the age of 16, so I'm not sure, because if I got out of it, I could send you in, if I signed all the right paperwork.
Forms.
And everything, right? Because it's power of attorney. But I'm talking about, if you want to practice in tax court, that you need a lawyer for that, or a CPA can do that, but he has to get certified to be able to do that. I think our colleague Dan Morris can practice in tax court. But the average CPA can't. But yeah, no, that's the only thing really it allows you to do. So a lot of talk, Ed, about splitting off the auditing. If you look at all the regulations from all the state societies, 90% of them are because we have this monopoly attest function, the audit function. Mm-hmm. Most of the rules are on independence and all this stuff that deals with, certifying financial statements. If we weren't licensed, we wouldn't have all these state regulations. And if we opened up audit to competition, letting the insurance companies in, letting the stock markets pick the auditors and pay for it, then we could just go back to certification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this was a very big topic of conversation at the ITA. They had their CAS group now. They've added a CAS practice group.
Yep.
And there was lots of conversation, not giving away any specifics of who said what, but do we need to hire CPAs to come into this practice? And the answer was pretty much no. There was actually a call, Ron, and I'd be curious as to your thoughts on this, of CMAs and I guess CGMA as well, too, that's maybe a better designation to bring in to the CAS practice, which I thought was interesting. But it was a pretty resounding, the CPA is helpful perhaps in other areas and allows you to go other places. But if we're really just going to have a full-on CAS practice, we don't have to get somebody who's a CPA. We just don't.
You can get a really competent accountant that knows the technology that you use that have been maybe certified by the publisher, like Sage or Intuit or whoever. Firms increasingly, according to this study, firms are increasingly turning to non-accounting students. So the AICPA Trends report says the hiring mix is 57.3% new graduates being accounting grads and 42.7% being non-accounting graduates. a shift of 11.5 points from 2018. So the firms are already out there hiring finance majors, MBAs, you know, people that don't have accounting. You don't need an accounting degree to do CAS work. You don't. In fact, you're probably better off not having it, because then it, like, say, if you came from finance, then you could do some of the analytical thinking and brain work and strategy work and modeling that a typical CPA is not educated really to do at that level.
So the thing that struck me, Ron, about the Cato event, and I, while I encourage people to listen to it, do it on double speed, because it was it was actually the among them.
The first speaker was incredibly dull. It got better after she was done, because then another guy came on and he was talking more about the licensure and the impact and all of that. But it did get better as it went on.
Well, and I did learn something from her, though, and that was she took us through the history of it. And what I didn't realize is that the original position what was put forward. So I guess it's position or posit, was that it should be a master's degree. And it seems like that there was no appetite for that. So then they compromised on this 150 hours. And because of that, it's been kind of a mishmash ever since, because a good number of the states don't require that the credits be in anything having to do with accounting. And you're finding people who are to get their 150 hours are combing through their high school transcripts to say, I passed AP biology with,
Tom Hood addressed this. He says, I've never met the accountant who took underwater basket weaving, to get their 150 hours or whatever. And look, that's probably true. You're not going to doing this extra 30 hours. You're probably going to take something in your minor or something that you're really interested in, right? It's probably not going to be something frivolous. Although I have to tell you, I took bowling to get to the 120 requirement when I was going through this. But here, I'll tell you what the National Association of Black Accountants say, and this is from the study. Mm-hmm. The extra 30 hours is a barrier that disproportionately affects minority CPA candidates and stymies firms' efforts to broaden the pipeline of recruits and meet diversity hiring goals. According to NABA, fewer than 7,000 CPAs nationwide are Black. That's 1% of the total, with only 2% of those in public accounting.
Yeah. So Ron, I think, one of the things we can perhaps extend this, but I interviewed for the Sage Thought Leadership podcast back in January of 2021, a fellow by the name of Herschel Frierson. And he is actually the chair of the board of directors of the National Black Accountants Association. Mm. And the conversation that I had with him, we did not touch on this. We were talking about other things. But he was named as to one of the top most influential people in accounting. So he's got those chops as well. So perhaps as a follow up, we'll reach out to him and get some of his thoughts on this in the future, because I think it's a big issue. It really is a big issue.
It is. Well, unfortunately, we're up against it. And folks, if you want to contact me or Ed, send us an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Do check out our Patreon channel, where you can get access to our bonus content. You can do that at patreon.com/TSOE. That channel is sponsored by 90 Minds. It's a matter of mind. Check them out at 90minds.com. And now a word from us.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
Hey folks, Ed here. Ron is far too modest to tell you about his new book with Paul Dunn, so I'm just going to have to go ahead and do it. Scheduled to release on December 8th, Time's Up, the subscription business model for professional firms, is going to rock the world like the firm of the future did 2 decades ago. While you can't get the book until December, you can join the pre-order club by buying the book and sending us your receipt. Benefits start in August and will continue through February. For more details, visit thesoulofenterprise.com/timesup.
Have you ever listened to an online radio show that changed your life? I'm required to say that I have. Have you ever stopped listening to an online radio show because the commercials were mind-numbingly repetitive? Of course you haven't, because you're here right now. Look, you don't have to listen to me anymore. There's a commercial-free version of this show, and it only costs $10 a month. And for $15 a month, you get no commercials plus bonus content. Go to patreon.com/TSOE. Subscribe now and be free. You're worth it.
Are you a fan of The Soul of Enterprise? Have you always wanted to demonstrate you could create a commercial that was better than what Greg Kite developed? Well, now is your chance. Ed, tell them all about it.
Ron and I are actively looking for new sponsors for The Soul of Enterprise, and we have big plans to grow the show. To learn more, send us an email to asktsoe@verisage.com and put sponsor in the subject line, and we'll send you over our latest sponsor pack. We would love for you to be part of the TSOE team.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Klass. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using #AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
And we are back on The Soul of Enterprise talking about the shortage of accountants and more specifically the 150-hour rule. But I guess that's not all of it, Ron. I want to ask this. You know, I mentioned that this was originally put forward as there needed to be a master's degree. Of course, you mentioned the fact that lawyers have to have an advanced degree. And heck, that's like it's not quite a doctor because that's 3 years, right? Law school is 3 years.
Right.
So it's an additional, I guess, what, 60 credits or something, or maybe 80, perhaps. But here's the thing. Is some of this, I mean, this may sound weird. Is some of this just legal envy? Is this just like?
I could see that. I also, there's a group of people, scholars included, that believe that the whole reason the 150 was brought in, I mean, they talk about mobility and, you know, reciprocity with the state so you can practice between the mm-hmm. states and all of that, the Uniform Accountancy Act. But a lot of people think it was done to reduce the number of CPAs because there was too many of them.
Oh, at the time? Okay.
At the time. Now, of mm-hmm. course, my priors tell me, yeah, that's probably true. Anything to reduce the number is what occupational licensure is all about. I'm not sure that's true, but I will tell you that according to this study, again, from Mintz that I'm looking at, they look at the degree completion rates from 14 and 15, and there were 79,000 BS and MS graduates from all the colleges in the U.S. As of 19 and 20, that decreased to 72,000. So it's an 8% drop. Colleges and universities are projecting a 15% drop in enrollment from the years 25 through 28. So they're looking out going, yeah, we don't see the pipeline coming in, you know, with more accounting grads. So yeah, this is an issue. And then of course there's a movement to get accounting added to STEM. That would make it STEAM. You know, you talk about a linguistic difference that doesn't matter. There's one for you. Mm-hmm. Just calling it part of STEM, I don't think would do a whole heck of a lot, you know, at the margin to bring people into the profession just because, oh, it's part of STEM. Mm-hmm. I do think alternative pathways are, and this is what.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. Cause I think that there's definitely some good compromise positions on this. I think.
There are. You can, rather than getting the 30 hours, why not get another year or two of experience? And if you interned, that could count towards that. You know, mm-hmm. when I graduated, I had to go get 500 hours of audit mm-hmm. And get signed off. Now, that takes 2 years to get, believe
correct.
It or not, back in the day. I'm all for what New York has got that nobody knows about, that, hey, if you pass the exam, you're in, except they do require 16 years of experience under a CPA. So, but why not? If you just like the old days with lawyers, you didn't have to go to college. I don't think Lincoln went to college, but he passed the bar. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, states like Washington are doing away with the bar. So you still have to go to law school. But mm-hmm. but in Washington, at least, I think one other state, you don't have to pass the bar anymore. They're trying to get more diversified as well. Mm-hmm. See, part of this, Ed, too, I think, is a college grab. Mm. Can't forget the college cash machine, right? I mean, they have a lot of sway.
Yeah. Yeah. And federal student loans and all of this other stuff. So
it all plays in there. The other thing this paper by Mintz recommends is firms need to up their game with salary, you know, and this is another recurring thing theme that comes up. The workload is too much. The pay is too low. These kids are looking at Reddit and other social media sites, and they're reading on Glassdoor, going concern, and they're reading what a first year, second year accountant has to go through, long hours, boring, rote, predictable work. And they're like, no way, don't want to do it. One of the academics in one of these papers points out our most popular accounting course. What do you think it is? And you'll probably get this.
I'll probably get this most popular accounting course?
By far, yep. Just think culture. Think culture. Culture.
Oh, accounting for high net worth individuals or celebrities?
Forensics.
Forensics. Okay.
Why is that? The movie The Accountant, right?
Oh, right, right. Yeah.
Ben Affleck. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, there's been some other studies that talked about the Illinois did a survey about what's keeping people out of the profession, and it was really interesting. I'm going to try and find it here, and I can't find it right away, but they talked about what some of the big hindrances are, and part of it was salary, you know, and I can't find it.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway,
but
yeah. Now, there's some interesting things. I'm not sure whether I think you're right. I think this is a lot of college grab going on here, but I've never understood why we can't do all of the professions as a system where you have a mentor, mentee, right? Apprentice. That's the word I was looking for. A journeyman apprentice. Right. I mean, I think that would actually significantly increase the quality, to be honest with you, because you're not only just going through the theory, you're going through the practice stuff that is put in place by people who are actually doing it on a day-to-day basis.
Well, this is the actual original idea behind certification. So let's talk about certification for a minute. Auto mechanics that work on your BMW and your Honda and your, you know, your Porsche, these folks are certified by the ASE, right? And they get a certification. And I think even the manufacturers certify, you know, for like Acura or whatever. And that's a certification program. They're not licensed. Computer programmers, Ed, right? You can get a certificate in Java, Python, C++, right? I mean, and demonstrate, and Google will hire you, if I'm not mistaken, and Microsoft, if you have the right certification and the programming language they're looking for. Economists are not licensed, and look at the havoc they wreak on the world, right? They're educated. You come out with a MBA or a master's in economics or a PhD, but there's no license. Yeah. There's not even a certification for economists. Actuaries are not state licensed. They are certified by the actuarial society that grants the fellowship at the various level that, you know, that they pass a certain number of tests. And chartered accountants in the UK are not licensed by the government of the UK. They are certified by the Institute of Chartered Accountants of England and Wales. Now, that doesn't mean they're not regulated by the government. I don't want anybody to misunderstand, just like we're regulated by the SEC, right? Mm-hmm. And even to some extent, the Treasury Department, the IRS, has regulatory authority over CPAs. But in England, they don't have a governmental license. Mm-hmm. It's done by their equivalent of the AICPA. So if we went to a certification route, and this is why I don't understand why the AICPA doesn't put this on the table. If we went a certification route, who's the logical person to certify? Or the logical end, it's the AICPA. They're the ones that do the test.
Right.
They would become the certifier. They would become the ASE of, you know, just like for mechanics. They would do that for the CPA profession. And then they could police it and kick you out if you did acts discreditable or whatever. We'd still have all the government regulation we have at the various state levels and the SEC federal level. But we wouldn't have a governmental license, and hopefully not the audit monopoly as well.
Right. Yep.
I did find the Illinois thing. Here's what the Illinois CPA Society 2023 report said. It was called writing retention. The biggest reason cited for people leaving. So this isn't so much the pipeline. It's people that are leaving after 3 or 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. Salary, too many hours, burnout, lack of work-life balance, workplace culture, and lack of advancement opportunities were the biggest, were the big five for why mm-hmm. people leave the profession.
Yeah, I actually talked to Jeff Brown from the Illinois Society of CPAs on the Sage Thought Leadership podcast. So I'll put a link that Greg can put up in the show notes on that. Very interesting guy as well. So,
because the turnover rate in the last 2 years was 39%.
And yeah, and to that end, I also spoke with Carrie Natalie, who is who wrote the CPA diversity report for the Illinois Society of CPAs as well. And this did come up in that interview as well.
Yeah. Yeah. They say accounting staff turnover is the highest after 3 or 5 years. There's one more myth that, we know the business model has a lot to do with people leaving in that 2 to 5 year period, right? The whole billable hour thing. I don't think it's burnout. I think it's moral injury. This is not what I signed up for. It's not why I became a CPA. I think in terms of the kids coming in, they can go on social media and read this stuff, and they're more aware of it than I was. You know, the only way I could learn what was going on inside of a Big Eight is to sit down and talk to somebody at, you know, a fraternity event or something about what their day-to-day life was about. And of course they spun it because, you know, they're trying to get you in there too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But boy, the truth comes out on social media. It's unadulterated, right? There's no spin.
There's no spin, unfortunately. No, they keep that away. Yeah. So it's interesting. Ron, you want to go to break now, and then we can pick up on a different topic when we get back. So
it sounds good.
All right. So I want to remind you, you can get a hold of Ron or me by sending an email to asktsoe@verisage.com. Of course, the website is The Soul of Enterprise, where you can see show notes as well as previews to upcoming shows. Again, our Patreon channel is a great place to get our show commercial free as well as our bonus episodes. So check that out at patreon.com/TSOE. But right now, a word from, once again, us again.
A little birdie told me Voice America is on X. Follow us at Voice America TRN.
Hey folks, Ed here. Ron is far too modest to tell you about his new book with Paul Dunn, so I'm just going to have to go ahead and do it. Scheduled to release on December 8th, Time's Up, the subscription business model for professional firms, is going to rock the world like the firm of the future did 2 decades ago. While you can't get the book until December, you can join the pre-order club by buying the book and sending us your receipt. Benefits start in August and will continue through February. For more details, visit thesoulofenterprise.com/timesup.
Have you ever been so annoyed by a commercial for a $5 ebook that you were willing to pay $10 to never hear it again? I sure have. Hello, I'm Greg Kite. Over the last several years, you've come to hate me, and I hate me too. By now, you know that for $5, you can get a copy of Ron and Ed's book. What you might not know is, for twice that much every month for forever, you can stop hearing me plug Ron and Ed's book, which totally makes sense, like the Diamond Water Paradox. Go to patreon.com/TSOE and subscribe today. Please, for the love of God, make it stop!
Are you a fan of The Soul of Enterprise? Have you always wanted to demonstrate you could create a commercial that was better than what Greg Kite developed? Well, now is your chance. Ed, tell them all about it.
Ron and I are actively looking for new sponsors for The Soul of Enterprise, and we have big plans to grow the show. To learn more, send us an email to asktsoe@verisage.com and put sponsor in the subject line, and we'll send you over our latest sponsor pack. We would love for you to be part of the TSOE team.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're
You are tuned into The Soul of Enterprise with Ron Baker and Ed Kless. To find out more about our show, visit us on the web at thesoulofenterprise.com. You can also chat with us on Twitter using hashtag AskTSOE. Now, back to The Soul of Enterprise.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We're talking about the CPA shortage. Is it a feature or a bug? We think it's predominantly a feature of licensing, but there's other issues involved. And Ed, one of them is I think we need to step back and have some humility about this. Mm-hmm. I think the general public would notice a garbage man shortage before they'd notice a CPA shortage. So I'm not sure that we're all that important. I mean, I know this is an issue for us, mm-hmm. but in terms of the rest of the world, trust me, the economy will continue to function even with a CPA shortage. But one of the myths out there, and I think this is kind of a big myth, is that salaries in the accounting profession have stagnated. Now, stagnated, that's a tough word. Does that mean they haven't kept up with inflation? It means that at a minimum, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
In fact, you could even argue that stagnation means you're losing ground to inflation. So now I don't want to get into time prices with you because, we know what's happened to the standard of living if we run it through the time price calculator. But I did run my career through the CPI inflation calendar. Mm. And I started in a high-end market, San Francisco. And my salary as of July 1984, when I was hired by Pete Mark, was $20,500. That was my incoming salary.
That's $10 an hour, Ron.
which back in the day they had gone up a grand or $2,000 in my last year of college. Mm-hmm. This was the 80s were halcyon days for CPAs. It was a good time to be coming out of mm-hmm. college. So that $20,500 in 1984 July, what do you think it's worth? Just inflation adjusted.
Just inflation?
Just inflation. And the latest I could get was December 2023. It wouldn't let me go into 24.
I would go with like $92,000, somewhere around there.
$60,400.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. Way overestimated.
So $60,400 would be the inflation adjusted to my 1984 salary. The annual salary in San Francisco for a Big Four, because it's no longer Big Eight, Big Four accounting salary in San Francisco, California, the top earners, $125,000. The 75th percentile, $89,500. The average, $83,500.
Is this his first year?
This is first year.
Wow. All right.
So, and the 25th percentile is... $51,800. So
now again, are you cherry picking because of San Francisco? If we looked at other markets, it might vary. And then
but so would cost of living and blah.
Yeah,
blah,
no,
blah.
True.
But if the inflation calculator that I'm running, sure, my salary is probably higher than what you found in the Midwest or something. Beginning salary, mm-hmm. I'm sure, but it would be all somewhat relative. I don't think we can make the case the CPA salaries have stagnated. The other thing that complicates this, Ed, that I've been thinking about is we talk about this in terms of CPA owners. There's 40 something thousand firms out there or whatever.
Right. In the U.S. Mm-hmm.
Most proprietors are very small shops. Right. And now they're business owners. They're not employees. So there's the owners of the business, and then there's the employees, mm-hmm. and they have different interests.
Yeah,
right. And some of them, the employees are the ones that don't have firms are interested in less competition, and so they want the benefits of the licensure limiting competition. Mm-hmm. Whereas the employees, that doesn't have that big of an impact other than they're competing against more CPAs in the market for their salary. But that's as stiff as the competition that a business person feels.
Well, let me throw devil's advocate at you from the salary standpoint on two fronts. One, we also got to compare that to the other places that people could go to work and do things like finance and all that. So that
absolutely.
So that option wasn't open to you in 1980. So
it was, but there's
more of it available today. Let's put it that way. Right.
Yep.
So that's number one. And number two is if there's a shortage, you would think that the starting salaries would significantly increase, right? Cause this would be, so why is that not the case?
Yeah.
That's what I don't quite understand, because we would say supply and demand would say, all right, salaries are going to increase because there's a shortage. Therefore, more people will say, yes, I'll do the 150 hours because I can make $120,000 coming out of college from that if I do that.
Right, right. And that's a good question. And of course, I'm going to put a large part of the blame on the business model, the we sell time business model, you know?
Okay. Because you can't get X number of dollars per hour for the first year person in the door,
right?
Okay,
you can't charge them out at $800 an hour or whatever. And I think also this is why you see some of these small younger firms that are coming up that are not even CPAs; they're EAs like Scott Scarano, who he's thriving now. Mm-hmm. He has CPAs in his firm, but he's an EA. Mm-hmm. And, he's grown to a 1.5 or 1.3, whatever it is, million-dollar firm. And that's because these young people are changing the business model.
Right. They're
not selling time.
Right. Well, I know it's hard to make predictions, especially about the future, as our hero Lawrence Peter Barrow once said. In my reading, this thing did not go through in Minnesota, right? It did not make its way out of the bill did not make its way out of the legislature, as far as I understand. So it's going to be reviewed in 2025, I think. So the next legislative term, so possibly. But what do you think is going to happen? Do you think there's going to be more and more downward pressure on this for the states, for one or more of the states to break free of this? Because once one state goes, it could be a pretty rapid descent, especially since then reciprocity is up for grabs, right? That is one of the arguments that I've heard put forward from the AICPA as well. We can't have this because then we're going to have to deal with the reciprocity issues, which I agree. That's going to be a pain in the ass. No two ways about it.
Absolutely. And that's NASBA's position as well. This is going to hurt reciprocity and mobility, right? Moving state to state. But look, the different states can do whatever they want anyway.
That's true.
And they already have different requirements, some of them, so they can always opt out since the legislature can't, hold a future legislature to anything because they can change the law, right? Just like one Congress can from another. So I don't know what's going to happen here, Ed, but I know the AICPA is really worried about occupational licensure coming under.
Oh, just in general, sure.
In general. And because there were, Tom Hood brought up on, Jason Blummer's podcast that there were 88 laws in the hopper last year across the U.S. states and I guess various jurisdictions to do away with occupational licensure. Now, Tom made it sound like a right left, the right and left are getting together on this. And there is bipartisanship. Obama's last Council of Economic Report said we need to have the states redo their occupational licensure. There's too many occupations that are licensed. Mm-hmm. And there are some laws that want to do away with the accounting license, and I'm all for it. And it just freaks people out. But I think the world would be better under a true certification program like the auto mechanics and like the other things that we talked about, the actuaries. I don't see any shortages in the actuarial area.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. But I can tell you this, I don't think it'll go our way. I don't think we'll ever see the audit monopoly be relinquished, even though I think we should. That would bring innovation into the profession, and that would force us to up our game.
Oh, we only got a minute left, but one of the things we haven't addressed here, and this was another thing that I heard out at ITA, is ChatGPT. Pretty damn good at asking some of your basic accounting and tax questions, like pretty damn good to the point, where I think that there was, and look, I'm not saying there's controversy over whether it did or did not pass the CPA exam. I'm not going down that right. path. But what I am saying is that answers to your basic questions that used to be the domain of, well, I guess I need to get an accountant for this. That's no longer the case.
And I think even some analysis too, Ed, I would throw in there. And yeah. Ask ChatGPT, hey, analyze this financial statement. Tell me where the red flags are and what's going right and wrong. And it'll do a pretty good job.
Right. Well, and of course, Aaron Harris's position when he had him on is that if we do get what is called continuous audit, he think there was more of a role for the CPA, especially from more of an advisory capacity. So if the software is actually conducting 90%+ of the audit, well, great. That's fantastic. Let's let the accountants do some other things that are of higher value work. And he said it would double. what was coming into the profession if that were to go that way. So I don't know. We live in interesting times, my friend, as always.
I agree. All right, Ed. Well, I'll see you next week.
Yep. See you in 167 hours.
This has been the Soul of Enterprise, Business, and the Knowledge Economy. Join us next week on Friday at noon Pacific time. In the meantime, check us out at thesoulofenterprise.com for more information on the show, some of the studies that we cited today. Also, contact Ed or me at asktsoe@verisage.com. Thanks for listening, folks. Have a great weekend.